Previously on X-Men.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the world's most mutated podcast. That's right, it's Uncanny Tracks covers X-Men 97. In this case, it's X-Men 97, Season 1. Should it be Episode 4 and 5, Matt, or just Episode 4? What do you think?
I don't know, Bob. It's 4 and 4.5.
Worthy compromise, worthy compromise. So Episode 4 is Motendo. It's about Jubilee's 18th birthday. She spends it running away from a fat man. I mean, as probably most of us spend our 18th birthdays. And then it's Episode 4.5, Life Death, Part 1. Part 2 is coming, but that will be Episode 7.
Correct. I feel like this episode, Bob, after coming off such fast-paced in Episodes 1, 2, and 3, 4 was more filler.
I think that's fair.
The stakes totally were not as high. There wasn't as much drama, but there was still some good stuff in there. Some really good Easter eggs, a lot of nostalgia fuel type stuff. Tell me though, Bob, you weren't a huge big fan of video games. So did this episode hit you as much as, I mean, the nostalgia piece?
So I'm not a huge fan of video games. I did play them in the 90s, although not as much as you, but I did play them. So I know enough about 90s video games and X-Men video games in particular that some of the nostalgia and some of the careful rendering which hit me here, although it's not really reflected in my outline, although I'm sure you'll bring up some of that. So, I mean, did I like this episode? This half of the episode, this episode 4 as opposed to 4.5, not really, but I mean, I don't like Mojo, so that's not super surprising.
Yeah, it was just interesting the way they took all the X-Men video games and combined them into this one thing. you had aspects of the arcade game, you had the Sega Genesis game, you had the actual system that was in the shape of a Sega Genesis, that was called Motendo, which Nintendo. There's just so many little references there. And then the actual footage of Jubilee fighting looked like it was straight from the arcade game.
Yeah. Although some of it was also pretty directly from the 92 animated series itself, which was interesting. But yeah, you're right, a lot of the actual quote-unquote gameplay looked like the arcade game.
All the settings were straight from the 92 series. They were just recreating parts of her life or parts of her life up to that point. So you had the Savage Land, you had Asteroid M, and then Genosha.
One thing you said earlier was that it was a filler episode, and I think you're right in some ways, although in other ways, I mean, obviously it's a Jubilee spotlight episode, and then in another way, it actually is developing Sunspot a lot more. I mean, still there's a lot to be done, but I feel we had some Sunspot development in the first episode, and then he's just been around and in the background for episode 2 and 3.
Yeah, this was a highlight, half an episode for Sunspot. Well, not really even a highlight, because we did get to see him use his powers a little, not much.
Yeah. And he's still primarily just a sidekick and a damsel in distress to Jubilee, which is fine, but it gives you some insight into Bobby DaCosta, but maybe not as much as us big 80s New Mutant fans are hoping for.
Yeah, he really is just taking the place of Jubilee. I mean, even in the intro scene where he's running into the fence, just like Jubilee.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
He's 97's Jubilee. Just like Jubilee was 89's Kitty Pryde.
And then arguably Kitty Pryde was the 80's Jean Grey.
Correct. I'll go all the way back to
All the way back. I should have said this at the outset, but I didn't. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. So, Matt, as we plunge into Motendo, we've already talked about this, but for Cameo Watch in the Genosha level, we see Warpath, Blob, Sunfire, and Domino, which was nice.
Yeah, they were in the original island, so it was good
they
to
were.
See. They were, yeah. Those were the same mutants.
Yeah. And then throughout most of this this episode, we have a mysterious figure who's following around Jubilee and Sunspot. Jubilee refers to her as a Hot Topic stalker, which I thought was a pretty good line, pretty good insult.
Yeah, when I saw her costume, I thought she was the character Penance. I was not familiar with this clone of Jubilee that gets revealed. I didn't know anything about her. So Penance had an outfit like this in Ultimate Alliance 2, the video game. That's my only real connection with her. And she was in Civil War as well, yeah, I believe. Yeah.
The game?
The comic. The comic. She was a character in that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure she was a part of that. That's why she was...
Are you thinking Monet St. Croix, or are you thinking Speedball?
I'm thinking of the one who basically, if the character feels pain, they become stronger. That's Penance.
So, Monet St. Croix is from the 90s Gen X comic, the 90s Generation X comic. And her gimmick is she's basically Veronica Lodge with Superman powers and telepathy. But... Oh, and this is very complicated, and it's not worth going into the ins and outs, nor could I. I don't even know if I could fully do it. But over the course of the Generation X run, it's revealed that she also takes on the form of this red-skinned mutant with claws and spiked hair that's nonverbal that they call Penance.
Yeah.
And now the status quo from since after the Generation X comic, for the most part, has been that Monet is sometimes in her Monet form and she's sometimes in her Penance form. But I don't think pain has anything to do with it, although maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think it does. And then do you remember what's the inciting incident for Civil War in the Civil War crossover?
Yes, that the big explosion in some neighborhood because they can't control some mutant that's got a power of blowing up.
Nitro, I believe it is.
Yeah.
And do you know what superheroes are responsible for it?
Oh, I remember. God, it's been forever, but I it's a team of people that are not that famous.
Yeah, they were big in the late 80s and early 90s, but we were never into them. They're called the New Warriors.
Yeah.
And then... one of the New Warriors is a guy named Speedball who bounces around, and I believe he's a late Steve Ditko creation. He was created for a solo series that didn't take off, and then he became a member of the New Warriors. Mm-hmm. And so it's been 20 years since I've read Civil War, or close to it, when it was coming out. But if I'm remembering right, it's Speedball is mostly responsible for the explosion in, I believe it's Hartford, Connecticut, or Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, so, okay.
Near WWE headquarters. And so out of regret and penance for being the primary cause of this, Speedball takes on a new form. I'm not sure if this is in Civil War or just in tie-in comics, but he takes on the new form of Penance.
Okay, that is who I'm talking about. Robbie Baldwin.
Oh, okay. Is that Speedball's name?
Yeah, that is Speedball. And yes, in Civil War, and specifically in Ultimate Alliance 2, he gains this costume that makes him feel pain. It's a weird character. But that's the one. The costume is very similar to that because it has the same type of mask, the same sort of look with a chain piece. I just I thought that maybe they were going in that direction for some reason.
It has an S&M gimp quality to it.
Yes, it really does.
I will say, I didn't think of Monet St. Croix when I saw this figure, but once you said it, I think she does have some later outfits that look like this. I don't think they're exactly like this, but I think there are some later outfits of Monet's that are like this.
Yeah, here, I'm going to copy an image to our notes, Bob, so you can see what I'm talking about when I refer to this outfit that, to me, sort of looked like a cartoon version of... There you go.
Okay. Yeah.
You could see where
where my mind goes with this. What's his name from Power Rangers? Lord Zedd?
Oh, yeah. Same sort of red on the arm.
For the listeners, there doesn't even appear to be eye spots, or a mouth or nose spot. He's just wearing a bucket on his head, then metal armor over the torso, and then it looks like exposed flesh on the all four limbs with some chains and some leather wrapped around. I'm not sure if that's supposed to be he's burned from the explosion or what.
Yeah, but the big thing, folks, is that on the helmet, he's got spikes that stick out. I don't think Bob is describing it very well.
Yes, they're short spikes that are hard to see.
I think he's purposely describing this character, not the character that Jubilee was in this, just to make my comparison not seem as valid. So, thanks, Bob.
How dare you accuse me of bug lamping you, Matt?
Yeah, bug lamping.
Yeah, bug lamping. That's what people call it.
All right, I'm to look that one
up. You never heard of bug lamping, Matt?
Never once, Bob, in my whole life have I heard the word bug lamping.
It's actually gaslighting. It's another form of gaslighting.
I know what gaslighting is.
It's another form of gaslighting that I don't say gaslighting.
Oh, Bob, I need you to cut that out.
No, Matt, you're stuck in an abusive podcast relationship, and there's no escaping it. So one other point about the costume is I think it's just supposed to be a more sort of extreme version of Longshot. The design, the visual image on the costume of this Hot Topic stalker is basically just Longshot.
And I mean, some people probably thought that might be Longshot at first too. I could see that, since he was such a, anytime Mojo shows up in the other two episodes of the original series, usually Longshot's there as well.
Yeah. Well, Matt, I guess we've beat around the bush about it long enough. So who was it that was the Hot Topic stalker that you thought was Monet St. Croix or Robbie Baldwin or old Longshot?
I thought it could have been Dazzler.
Mojo does reference Dazzler. Yeah. Who was it, Matt?
Oh, it was Jubilee, the clone Jubilee. Some from the future. I don't know.
She's a computer programmed Jubilee or whatever, because they're in the video game. And so right. Mojo made a lot of Jubilees as beta testers. And this is the only Jubilee who survived. So subjectively, she's very old because she's been running in this accelerated time frame of the video game for a certain amount of time.
That does make sense, I guess. But man, if you used to let video games run at the very beginning, it would let the computer play it by itself.
That was Jubilee. Every time you do that, it's Jubilee inside your video game system playing it for you. Speaking of which, at one point in the games, we do see Sauron draining Jubilee, which I loved. It made me happy. And we also do get Sunspot speaking a few lines in Portuguese, speaking of Sunspot getting development, which I thought was cool. I can't think of a time in anything else I've ever heard a Brazilian or a Portuguese character just whip out some Portuguese in an American context. So that was neat.
And then Mojo, Bob. Mojo got skinny, but then Mojo got big.
Yeah, is it anti-woke? Is it anti-body positive that Mojo got skinny, Matt?
I don't know what that was supposed to be, because he just was very skinny and then he was very big again.
Yeah, yeah. I just like to pick at things that might be hypocritical in woke shows, because I'm a bad person, so I'm going to pick at that. Any other thoughts about Motendo, Matt?
I mean, other than, like I said earlier, Longshot did not make an appearance, but is that because...
Thank God.
Is that because Jubilee's legal?
Ayo! Jubilee's like, Longshot, I'm 18 now. Why do you never reach out? He's like, I think you know why. God.
There was a stuffed animal on her shelf or something that referenced Longshot. So they at least added that. Yeah, so it was this little stuffed animal thing that was a Longshot.
That doesn't make the situation better.
Yeah. Also, what were the real plans for her birthday? Because there were all kinds of great plans, and then she's up spending the whole day in her room.
Let's be honest. That's what she would have done anyway.
Yeah, probably. She didn't want to go down to the arcade and get a chili dog.
Then the implication is that she and Sunspot bone at the end.
Probably. At least a second base.
They're laying back on the bed, at least. Yeah. Where it goes from there, it's up to you to decide, dear viewer or dear listener. Yeah. So shall we move on to Life Death Part 1, Matt?
Right, Bob. Life Death Part 1. And here we're talking about Storm not having her powers, and... Forge does come clean about taking part in constructing this weapon that ultimately took her powers from her.
I was wondering if they were going to go that angle or not, but they do, and it's interesting. I thought they did it well. But I want to begin with what to me is the most important issue, Matt, which is Forge's chili looks good.
Yeah, he makes a good chili, Bob. He's Forge, and his mutant power.
Anything he can conceive, he can make, so he can conceive the best possible bowl of his dad's chili and make it. On the cameo watch, we do see Quicksilver, Havoc, Polaris, Strong Guy, Wolfsbane, and Multiple Man in an X-Factor snapshot with Forge, which was nice. It made me sentimental.
They were all from Cold Comfort, so that was at least fit the continuity.
Which is a really wild episode where Polaris gives new meaning to ghosting Bobby Drake. It's a truly wild episode. Yeah. You should go back and listen to our coverage of it. I believe that one's out.
Yes, it is.
Join us on patreon.com, Uncanny Treks, and find our coverage of Cold Comfort. It's wild.
Cold Comfort was actually season 3.
Okay, so they found time in between the Phoenix Saga for Polaris to ghost Bobby Drake. Just to be clear, I support Polaris ghosting Bobby Drake. Bobby Drake's annoying. Lorna needs her independence. I mean, Havok's pretty annoying too, but I'm sure Havok's a better boyfriend than Bobby Drake.
No.
So, Matt, in this episode, Forge somewhat defends himself after revealing to Storm that he designed the gun that took Storm's powers by saying that a Scottish scientist finished the design mm-hmm. and actually manufactured it. And I was wondering, is that Moira? I mean, Moira MacTaggert or Moira X to those of us who love her from the John Hickman run? Or would it be, is there somebody else I'm forgetting who's Scottish who might have an interest in doing that?
No, I think it's Moira because she wanted to shoot Proteus. There was that whole two-part episode, Bob, where they have to go hunt Proteus and he tears up the town.
We don't have any sense in the current Krakoa era. Moira has gotten pretty anti-mutant, but there's no hint of that in the animated series, so I was not thinking it made sense, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, she would want it to quote unquote cure her son who's never been able to control his mutant powers.
Or to shoot Charles.
Well, I mean, Xavier has it coming, we can all agree. Yeah. Man, we do get some great Storm one-liners in this episode in the grand tradition of X-Men 92. Did you have any favorites, Matt?
Not really, no. The second part of this episode was okay, but it was just, almost was just an entire Storm episode.
Well, I mean, we'll get a full Storm.
I know, but I just don't. It's just weird. This is one of the weirder episodes I've watched because of the halfway point and it just starting a new episode.
I wish more shows would do things like this, where you, I mean, one of the problems with X-Men 92 would have been they would have stretched the Motendo thing out to a 25-minute episode when there's no call for that because there's not enough material. So I like the idea that Super Friends styles, you can tell 10-minute stories or 5-minute stories when that's all you have.
Yeah, it just reminds me of Arthur the Aardvark, that show. Always had that same
format.
Yes, exact same format. But they had a song in the middle, Bob, and that's what this was missing.
Do you remember the name of Arthur the Aardvark's best friend?
Buster the Bunny.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the guy who was the voice actor for Buster the Bunny is now a famous YouTube right-winger. And I think we can say, based on leaks, I don't think I'm in legal danger of saying this, I think we can say wife abuser, Steven Crowder.
Oh.
And it's also weird because Steven Crowder is super, super homophobic and super, super transphobic. But yet, he's always on his show getting into a dress to own the libs. And it's just, my man, I feel there's something inside yourself that you need to express. I'm not owned by the fact that you're in a dress.
I don't know, Bob. I don't know if that's... This is Buster Baxter and it's Daniel Brochu. That doesn't sound right.
All right, well, to fact check... Begin. I'm not fact checking that Steven Crowder is a wife abuser. I believe we have enough leaks that we can say that definitively.
Yeah, but the dude who actually plays Buster Baxter is not that guy.
He was Alan the Brain Powers. I know I watched some Arthur, but I have to say I'm grateful that I don't remember. Like, I remember Arthur. I don't really remember the sidekicks. I remember the annoying sister, but that's partially because she's pretty present in meme culture to this day. And that, do you remember if that show was like super right-wing Christian crap in hindsight?
I think so. I don't remember enough of the plots, honestly. I don't think it was down your throat that like that, but I think it had,
well,
there was a whole moral superiority to it.
It was supposed to indoctrinate you, but like good propaganda, it wasn't always super overt about what it was or what it was doing.
True.
Well, on a semi-relevant note, to go back to one of my favorite lines from Storm, you of all people should know the perils of trusting people in Washington, she yells to Forge.
That's the truth.
At one point, a little later, she tells Forge, you meant to make me a goddess. Instead, you fashioned a fool. Matt, did you know who the villain was who shows up at the end of this episode?
Not a clue. I just saw this thing. I don't know what that is. I thought it was going to be related to Shadow King, but apparently not.
It does sort of seem it would be, doesn't it? He's called the Adversary. In the comics, he's supposed to be... Forge is Cheyenne, and the Adversary is supposed to be a part of Cheyenne mythology or cosmology. I'm not familiar with Cheyenne mythology, so I could not tell you if that's actually true or if it's just a comic booky invention. But the Adversary shows up a few times in the 80s. Most notably as the villain in the Fall of the Mutants crossover, which is the second big X-Men crossover. The first one is Mutant Massacre, And then the last one in the 80s, the third one, is the Inferno. So Fall of the Mutants is number two, and it famously ends with the X-Men appearing to die in Dallas. And then that's when they go into hiding as the Australian team in the Outback.
Okay.
So that the Adversary is the villain in the Fall of Mutants, and he's long associated with Forge and Storm in those 80s comics. So I did just want to emphasize what a really huge 80s kick X-Men 97 is on, between Goblin Queen, between the Adversary, between the Marauders. We've got elements from the three big crossovers of the late 80s. And I think in a way that's a sort of natural progression for the show, because if you think about the comics that X-Men 92 covered, it pretty much got us to the equivalent of the mid 80s. It did the Brood Saga, it did the Two Phoenix Sagas, it did a lot of the early late 70s, early 80s Claremont stories. And so before, I've longed for X-Men stories that actually do adapt further into the Claremont run, and lo and behold, X-Men 97 is giving it to me, Matt.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like, I didn't think about that, but it's true. You're not seeing anything. They didn't go past 97 as far as the comics go.
Well, in some ways they are, right? Because there's some similarities, especially in that pilot, to the Morrison run.
Right.
But a lot of the inspiration is coming from the late 80s and the early 90s, though.
Yeah. Which fits with what you said about the showrunner not wanting White Queen involved.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It does. I am going to be very curious and probably very angry when it comes up. And man, I still can't believe they fired the dude. He's done, even though this is the weakest episode by far, such a good job to this point.
Well, Bob, I'm going to tell you my character of the week. It's Jubilee.
Hit us, Matt.
It's Jubilee, Bob.
All right, Matt. All right. I'm tempted to say my character of the week is the absence of Longshot, but that's unfair. So I'm going to say Forge is my character of the week.
All right, Bob. Before we wrap up, I wanted to point something out that I thought was very interesting. There is, they have made changes to every opening credits that we've watched so far.
And I know they have.
You mentioned it last couple episodes ago, and because I didn't even watch the second opening credits, I don't care. But then I found out their Easter eggs, and I'm watching all of them. I'm going to point out some of the things that they've done in each one that maybe you didn't catch. All right.
Hit me.
So first off, I think in the first episode, we caught everything. There wasn't that much other than Jean Grey's been added to the very beginning of it. And they're in different spots. You have Bishop and Morph have been added to the opening credits.
Sunspot too, right? Or is that later?
That's later. No. So yeah. Oh, okay. So you've got Bishop, Morph, Jean Grey. They're all in there in the opening. So that's good. They changed out the bad guys. We knew all that. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Second episode, they went back and they recreated or redrew scenes from previous episodes. So you saw Storm defeating Callisto. You see her beating her. You see another redrawn image of the Dark Phoenix. You see Bishop falling back through time. And you see Asteroid M, but you also see Magneto at the beginning of the episode because he's now the leader.
Yeah, I pointed out the Magneto one.
Right.
I think now that you said the other ones, I think I saw them, but they didn't register to me as new because I don't have a good visual memory.
But then, okay, episode three, that's where we get Sunspot. We also get this really cool image of Lilandra, who we haven't seen, with Professor X. We get an image.
Okay, I totally missed that.
Yeah, we get an image of Storm and Cyclops taking on Magneto in that first, I think it was called, was it Inner Magneto was the name of the episode?
Yeah.
We see a recreation of that. We see a recreation of Jean Grey sacrificing herself as the Phoenix and Cyclops watching. And we also see this image of, I don't remember this from the original, but it's Gambit trying to kiss Rogue and her covering his mouth with her hand.
I think I did see that, but it didn't register to me as new.
Here's the big one, Bob. You ready? This is the
best. Is this in the third one or the fourth one?
That's the third episode, Fire Made Flesh.
Okay.
Okay. Here's the big thing I caught that I thought was awesome. All right. Jean Grey, in episode four, when they pull her up, she has a ponytail. In all the previous episodes, what did she have?
A ponytail?
No, her hair down. That was Madeline Pryor. So they switched it out. Now she's got her ponytail back because Jean Grey, the actual Jean Grey, is back.
Oh, interesting. It's insane. Interesting. That's crazy.
You also got some recreated shots of Jubilee taking on Mojo in that episode we watched. Not the first Mojo episode, but the second Mojo episode.
The one where Longshot romances Jubilee.
Then you also have a shot that goes back to X-Factor, which is cool, where you see Iceman in his outfit. Mm. And then there was a shot of the Hellfire Club with Emma Frost and Professor X. I don't know why they're showing those images. I don't know if it's just a they're just trying to remind you that went down on the old stuff. I don't know. But I thought the Jean Grey thing was really clever because they also did that on the action figure. I couldn't figure out why they wanted to give us a head of Jean Grey with her hair down and a head with the ponytail. That's how you're going to be able to tell the difference between the two.
Nice. No, that's interesting. It's crazy that they're putting so much care into the openers. I think I watched the first three, but I skipped the one for the Mojo and Storm episode.
Yeah. All right, Bob. So next week, I think we're back to Remember It. So, Bob, next week we've got Remember It dropping.
You have speculated as a Gambit episode.
Correct, yeah, because he's Remember the Name, or Remember It. The name's Gambit. Remember It. Mm-hmm. We might finally get the whole Magneto-Rogue relationship or triangle with Gambit may finally pay off or come to fruition. All right, Bob.
All right. Well, this has been Uncanny Treks. Join us on Patreon if you want to see our coverage of the original show with Young Justice, which we are continuing to release weekly over on Patreon, or just stick with us on the free feed for more episodes about X-Men 97, more episodes about Fantastic Four comics, and whatever else we feel like covering. I did want to take a minute at the end of the show to just say RIP to Ed Piskor, who died, I think, on Monday, who was the writer-artist behind X-Men Grand Design, which I think both of us really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Really, really tragic, premature death of Ed Piskor. Very, very horrible to hear about. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.